Buddy, I'm Beattie Cohn Vredos, and welcome again to the Ask Beattie Show. And isn't it the truth? It doesn't matter whether or not we are a Beatle, or an actress, or a burlesque dancer, or a psychotherapist, or a sex therapist. The reality is, my friends, is that we all go through so many ups and downs in our lives. And I was thinking as I was on the subway from the Upper West Side to the studio here in Midtown, New York, that wouldn't it be a terrific thing if in the schools they actually taught the kids that it was really, really important that when they had issues and problems and they were upset or depressed or angry or having problems with their little friends, that it was somehow okay for them to reach out and ask for help. Because what I have found, and I've been practicing now as a psychotherapist and a sex therapist for a very long time, for over 35 years, is that people, they just wait so long, and there always is a crisis. And, you know, I say to friends all the time that nobody ever calls and says, listen, Beattie, I want some help with communication or problem solving. Although, God knows, we all need help with communication and problem solving. But if nothing else, I hope every single week here on the Ask Beattie Show, and today, by the way, is the 254th Ask Beattie Show here on the Progressive Radio Network, that I'm able to say something to motivate, to inspire you, that when you feel that you're on a roller coaster ride, and not a fun roller coaster ride or a merry-go-round, that you actually give yourself permission to reach out and ask for help. And of course, the call-in number here, and we are also on Facebook Live, the call-in number here on the show, you can call me right now if you have any issues or questions or you want to debate or discuss anything with me. The number is 888-874-4888. Because if you look, for example, at what's going on in this country in the world of depression, the statistics are totally alarming. What we have statistically is over 16 million adults are suffering from true clinical depression, and that translates worldwide into about 350 million people. And what you may not know is anxiety disorders are now occupying the number one mental health issue in this country, with approximately 40 million adults who are suffering from a variety of different types of anxiety. And what about substance abuse? You know that you're just drinking too much, and you can make all kinds of excuses. I can stop anytime. And yet when things start to get a little bit dicey in life, what are you doing? You're reaching for that shot, and then maybe that second shot. And these days, I mean, so many people are using prescription medications of all kinds. And I find that people are just using way too many prescription drugs, including antidepressants. I mean, I have a patient who is taking four different sleeping medications every single night prescribed by her psychiatrist. And I have to tell you, I've been trying for the last couple of years. She's doing well in a lot of ways. She's bipolar. Her mood is pretty stable. And I've said to her, I said, like, come on, I think you need to get a second opinion. Four sleeping medications, I don't think that's really working for you. And when I saw her last week, she says, you know, I'm waking up in the middle of the night. I said, you've got to be kidding. You are on four different medications and you are waking up in the middle of the night and somehow you think this is okay. So whether or not we're talking about prescription medications or whether or not we're talking about over-the-counter medications, I think that the reality is that we all have some work to do. We all have some work to do. And whether or not the work involves dealing with old issues, which I call skeletons in the closet or unfinished business, which we all certainly have to a greater or lesser degree, there are ways that you can deal with this, and you can deal with this successfully, even though you cannot, unfortunately, change our history. We cannot change our parents. We cannot change what did or did not happen in our early, early lives. But there is a way. There is a way to be able to emotionally really work through the traumas, the disappointments, the pain, the anger, the depression, so that you're able to really be in the moment instead of having one foot in the past and one foot in the present. And I was talking to a therapist a couple of weeks ago, actually Naomi Schneider, who was on the show, who was a co-author with Carol Gilligan, and their brand new book, Why Patriarchy Persists. And Naomi and I, we were talking about therapy, and she's right now in training to be a psychoanalyst. And she was saying to me how she's so concerned, she's from London, how so many therapists and so many therapeutic orientations somehow convey to people that they don't have to deal with the issues from their past, that they can somehow just bypass what did and did not happen and change their mind and change their perspective and move forward. And all I can tell you is that sounds really nice, but the reality is, and if there was a way that I could have fast-forwarded people's pain by not having to take people back to what I call the scenes of the crime, I would have figured out how to do this a very, very long time ago. And for those of you who are serious, and I say serious because a lot of people, they think they're serious about being in therapy, but they're just kind of not really ready to do all the hard work. I found that there's no way to be able to live in the moment without working through as best as we can what did and did not happen in our early lives. So that is Beattie Cohn Bredow's perspective on what effective psychotherapy looks like. And what about sexual problems? And for those of you who've been listening to the show, you know that we're really not doing well in this country when it comes to sex. I mean, we live in this, in quotes, sexualized society, but we're having a lot of real live problems in the bedroom. And I quote the statistics. Do you know that in France, as an example, and frequency is not necessarily the measure to be able to let people know whether or not people are having good sex or not, but in France, people have sex 2 to 4 times a week. And in the United States, take a guess how often the majority of Americans are engaging in sexual activity. Well, that number is about 2 times, a little actually less than 2 times a month. So we're stressed and we're busy and we're not taking care not only of our sex lives, our relationships, but we're also not doing a very, very good job in taking care of our physical health, which is, of course, what Gary Null talks to us about every single day, and about the importance. For example, people make all kinds of excuses about what we're eating and what we're not eating. And if Gary hasn't convinced you with all of the world-class research that he cites every single day on his show about the importance of a Mediterranean diet. I mean, we can make all kinds of excuses about why we can't have a Mediterranean diet. And yet, the studies are clear. The fruits, the vegetables, the plant-based diets, that makes all the difference in the world. And of course, Gary talks, and I love this term that he uses. He talks about intentional ignorance and intentional neglect, especially when we have the data, we have the research to let people know what is really in our best interest, whether or not we're talking psychotherapeutically or whether or not we're talking about our diets. And yet we rationalize, we make so many excuses about why we can't. We're too busy, we're too lazy, we're too tired. And yet what we're doing is that we're really self-sabotaging. We're self-sabotaging our mental health. We're self-sabotaging our physical health as well. So we know about the importance of exercise. We know about the importance of diets. We also know about the importance of having supportive people in our life. And, you know, I want you to think about who are the people in your life, the people who you interact with on a regular basis. Are they people who bring out the best in you, or are they people that bring out the worst in you? Are they people who are supportive and loving and sensitive? And that does not mean in our relationships that we're not going to have ups and downs with people who we love and people who love us. But you know, I think, what I'm talking about when I talk about poisonous people, people who sabotage us, people who criticize us, people who gaslight us, people who literally make us crazy. And yet, because of our own stuff, we allow and enable these people to ruin our days and frequently ruin our lives. And if you're in that kind of a situation, you know, my question really to you is what are you going to do about it? Are you going to continue to enable? Are you going to continue to play out the role of victim? Or are you going to, if you're not able to do this on your own, to reach out, just like the Beatles tell us, and ask for help and figure out what can I do to extricate myself from toxic, poisonous relationships? You know, we can talk about toxins in the environment, but people, toxic people, just like the toxins in our environment, can really, really do us in. So again, my question to you is, are you taking care of your business? Are you being good to yourself? And every patient who leaves my private practice here in New York City and in East Hampton, I ask them to think about two questions as they are walking out my door, and that is to monitor themselves and to ask themselves every single day as they are going throughout their daily business, whether or not whatever it is that they're doing, is it in your best interest? Are you being good to yourself? Are you doing things that are helpful versus are you doing things that are either in your worst interest or things that are actually harmful to you? Whether we're talking about toxic people, whether we're talking about toxic foods, to be able to be mindful of how we are living our lives so that we are going to have a balance. I mean, we all have to work, and that's going to take up a number of hours during the day. But in the final analysis, it's about love. It's about meaningful work. It is about taking care of our health. And also doing good and reaching out and helping people. And there are studies that show that one of the best things that can help us combat depression and anxiety is reaching out and helping other people. I mean, I feel so lucky, so gratified that from the time I was a little girl, I always knew that I wanted to help people. I didn't know when I was 3 or 4 years old exactly what that meant. But I grew up in a family in Winnipeg, Canada, where helping others was just a part of how our family functioned. And I can be having a bad day. Something hasn't worked out well. And yet, you know, people will come in and, you know, I do my therapy, and it makes all the difference in the world to be able to give to somebody else and to see that you've had some really, really positive impact. Well, I have a guest, but before I am going to introduce this really terrific guest, I'm going to play one of my favorite songs, which I think is very apropos about all of us needing to live our lives and be free to be you and me. So Marlo Thomas's song, Free to Be You and Me. I wish I could sing this better, but the fact is that we all need to find a way to live our lives and be free to be you and me. Well, my guest today is Pearls Daily. Now, my husband Jim and I, we were at the show at the Box Theater just a week ago. And, of course, we were watching I'm Not a Comedian. I'm Lenny Bruce with our good friend Ronnie Marmo. And who was on stage? Who was on stage? Well, this beautiful, beautiful young woman. Pearls Daily, who is amongst many, many things, an actress, a comedian, but in this particular show, she was a burlesque artist. And there was something about Pearls. I said to Jim, I said, I need to get to know this woman. I mean, she was great. And I'm just so glad, Pearls, that you agreed to come in.
Oh, of course. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, so
I've really felt a real connection with you when I met you. And Jim too. Hi, Jim.
Well, we felt exactly the same way. And you know, when you talk about Free to Be You and Me, I mean, so many people, they have all kinds of ideas about what kind of women, you know, end up in the burlesque world. And I mean, you're an artist. So let's start at the beginning. I really want to know how this all came to pass, because you said before the show you grew up in a stable family in upstate New York. So here's this lovely girl from this Catholic family, and yeah. She's on stage and she's taking off her clothes. So tell us how this all came about.
Sure. Well, yeah, I am. I'm from an Irish Catholic family from upstate New York, a small town called Watkins Glen.
Uh-huh.
I moved to the city as soon as I turned 18, immediately after high school. I came here to study theater and dance.
You did?
Yes, I did.
So you always knew you wanted to be a performer?
Always.
Uh-huh.
I actually was just having this talk with my mom yesterday.
Uh-huh.
We went to see my high school. They were doing a production of Once Upon a Mattress, so I actually went back to my high school
uh-huh.
and saw my high school directors, uh-huh. and it was really sweet.
Uh-huh.
But it was interesting, we were just talking about that yesterday. I was like, I never wanted to be anything else. Did I, when I was little, did I ever say anything? She goes, no, this is what you always wanted to do. I was like, that's how I felt. Yeah. So it's true. I've always wanted to be on stage. That was my goal.
And they supported you from the time you were a little girl.
I lucked out. I really did. I come from a very creative family. My father is a musician.
Uh-huh.
And a political cartoonist.
Uh-huh.
And my mother's a seamstress.
Yes.
So they're very creative people, and I think they saw that in me at an early age, and they just let me be who I was, and they encouraged me, and they didn't push me in any strange ways,
mm-hmm.
and I just really, I always wanted it.
Without judgment, without criticism, it was
yeah.
like you have to do what you feel like you want to do.
Exactly. I mean, I've always communicated with them, you know, what's going on with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've never hidden anything from them, so we have great communication. And also, you know, I'm really proud of what I've done and my whole journey, and I feel like where I'm at now, I'm doing everything that I love.
How wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, we're very lucky because I feel exactly the same way to be able to do the kind of work that we love. I mean, I never actually think of the work that I do as work. It's a passion,
agree.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, when you break it down, I mean, there is the physical nature, especially, I mean, with me, the physical nature of my job,
right.
the rehearsing, the schlepping through the city with all of your costumes,
right.
You know, the physical nature of it. But I agree. I love it. I'm just so passionate about it that I wake up every day and it's kind of like Christmas.
And you're such a natural. And I mean, the show, I'm Not a Comedian, I'm Lenny Bruce, is going to be continuing here in New York for, we hope it's going to end up on Broadway, right? I mean, that is the hope.
There is so many exciting things and talks for the show. I don't know if I can talk about all of them on air. I don't want to get in trouble, but yes, it's very, very exciting. A lot of people are interested in the show, and you know, we'll see what happens. And it's been going very, very well. The crowds are picking up. We've been getting a lot of amazing press.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got featured on Extra. I don't know if you got to see our Extra bit.
We
it was
did.
So good.
Jim, who never watches Extra, we definitely turned it on. And no, it was wonderful.
Yeah.
But what you did, you added, because Jim and I had seen the show prior to you know, you're being in it. And you added something. It was so spectacular how you paraded around the room at the Box Theater and engaged. I mean, I was looking around, and of course, as a psychotherapist, sex therapist, I'm always looking at people, looking at people's reaction.
I love that.
And how you engaged. And it wasn't just the men, although the men there, I mean, you have to, we're on Facebook Live right now. I think people really need to tune in and take a look at how gorgeous Pearls Daily is. But no, you touched people. I mean, not literally touched them, but I mean, you touched all of us in a really, really spectacular way and set the scene for Ronnie, you know, coming on stage.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that's one of the really interesting tools with, you know, having burlesque in the show and opening it up for Ronnie in such a way. I mean, that was in that time. Like, you know, Lenny Bruce did shows at strip clubs, and that's really what happened a lot of the time. So I think that it's almost like an immersive thing, you know, uh-huh. having that open the show. It gets people in the time period. It gets people in the feeling of a club.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's like you're really in, you know, 1958, and you're really about to see Lenny Bruce. And it kind of sets you up for that. And then to open up the play in the kind of sad way that it does, I think that that's really shocking. And I think that that really suits the material as well.
No, absolutely. And I really, really suggest that everybody definitely goes to see I'm Not a Comedian. I'm Lenny Bruce. So how did you get into this whole burlesque world? Because, you know, when I was looking at your bio, you've done a lot of film and TV and stand-up and sketch comedy and improv and magic. You do magic as well?
I've assisted magicians. I can't say that I am a magician, but I've assisted a lot of really exciting magicians.
So you've done so much within this particular world. So how did you decide that you were going to become a burlesque artist, which is what you are?
Yeah. It's a very, very, very dear story to me. About 8 years ago now, I was acting mainly focused on stage. Mm-hmm. And I auditioned for a replacement contract in an off-Broadway show called Play Dead.
Uh-huh.
Have you heard of the show?
No, okay. I haven't.
It was a really, really exciting show that involved a lot of illusion. It was directed by Teller of Penn & Teller.
Uh-huh.
And the role required full nudity.
Wow.
Yes. It was like a theme of rebirth. So I played a medium from the 1920s who comes back from the dead or is reborn, however you choose to interpret it. And I was pulled from a body. Totally nude. That was part of the gig.
Was that the first time you ever took your clothes off in
a
show?
Yes, it was. It was my first foray into onstage nudity of any kind.
And what was that like for you?
It was really exciting.
I mean, you've got a great body. Thank you. I think that a lot of women and men who may be very self-conscious about their bodies, you know, that would have been really, you know, tough, not only to do it in front of a crowd, but, you know, with body images.
Sure.
So for you, that was not an issue.
No, I mean, I definitely had to prepare for it. And it was also something where I had, you know, I'd never done anything like that. I thought to myself, I was like, you know, there's certain, what if I get an opportunity? I think of Kate Winslet very often, actually,
yes.
Who's amazing. And, you know, I'm like, Kate Winslet, you know, she's nude and with her work, you know, what if I get an opportunity like Kate Winslet? I want to be ready for it.
Uh-huh.
And I want to feel comfortable. I just got to go for it. So,
were you nervous?
Oh, I'm nervous every time I audition or perform.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I love that. I think that you should be. You know,
yes.
You should be nervous. You should have those feelings. I think if you don't have those feelings, then you need to check in a different way.
I agree.
You know? Oh, so, yes, I was definitely very, very nervous. But I was also really, really excited because I had never done anything like that. And uh-huh. It was kind of me being really brave in a way that I'd never
very,
been brave before.
Very brave.
So that was my first foray uh-huh. into like any kind, you know, onstage nudity. And I booked the part, and I met my best friend in the whole wide world, Miss Cherry Delight, who is a wonderful burlesque artist as well.
Yes.
And she's also an amazing singer. She has an album coming out. It's very, very exciting. And we hit it off right away. It was like kind of like what we were talking about before the show about like chemistry.
Absolutely.
With people. Actually, very similar to how I felt about meeting you, where you just kind of hit it off. You're like, I just love this. You know, I love this person. I love talking to them. We hit it off right away. And at the time, she was hosting a show at a place called Duane Park. And they have a new location now, but their old location was way downtown on Duane and Park. And it's a beautiful burlesque venue. If you ever want to check out live music with burlesque, I highly recommend it. Anyway, she was hosting a show there, and she was like, listen, I'm hosting this burlesque show. You should come kitten for me. Which a kitten in a burlesque show picks up after the dancers.
What do they do?
So, like, the dancer comes out and strips, and then the kitten picks up the things. And
so
gives
that
them
was
back.
Your beginning.
That was my beginning. I was a kitten. Yes, with my beautiful friend who was hosting the show. And we just, and you know, kittening is really fun. It's a great way to kind of, you know, get your foot in the door and kind of see what it's all about. And of course, you know, you keep the show running.
Do you wear clothes as a kitten?
Oh, yeah, you do. Oh, yeah, you full costume, glamour. You could be sexy. You know, you ham it up with the host. You know, it depends on the show. It depends on where you are. But it was a lot of fun, especially with my friend. And that was kind of, that was the beginning. And I kittened for about 3 years straight before I did my first act.
How did you get your first act?
So my first act, I'd been kittening and I'd been loving it. You know, I was go-go dancing as well and really kind of getting into the scene. And people were asking me, they were like, you know, you have an act, we'd love to book you. And I was like, no, I don't have anything yet, you know, when the feeling is right. And then I went to the New York School of Burlesque.
You did?
Yeah.
What is that about?
Oh, it's so great. I highly recommend it. It's the headmistress is Jo Booz Weldon, and she's a great lady. She's the headmistress there, and I took their Essential Series class, which kind of goes over like the early history of burlesque and, you know, some of the standard moves, things like that. And then at the end of it, it kind of culminates in a graduation, and you do a showcase.
How many classes? How long is this kind of a program?
The Essential Series, if I recall, I believe it's about a month.
That's it.
It's quick. They have different classes, different things that you can do. I highly recommend the Essential Series for anybody who's interested in studying, because I feel like you get a really great start in burlesque.
But I have a sense, correct me if I'm wrong, that you were probably always very comfortable with your body. The way you move.
Yes. Yeah.
Even the way you sit.
Sure.
Right now.
Thank you. I I'm a dancer. I grew up.
Yes.
I grew up in doing ballet. That was my original thing. So as soon as I had a lot of energy as a kid, and as soon as I could, my mom had me in dance classes because that's. I just really wanted to do that. And I had, you know, I watched old Turner Classic movies and I loved that whole thing. So, and also in upstate, especially at that time, you know, ballet and dance was really one of the only available art forms to study. There wasn't a lot of opportunity, you know, to be on stage or to study in that way. So dance was an easy outlet for me.
So you took the class and then you started to get booked. You put together an act.
Yes, I did. My first act was a homage to the movie Pleasantville. Have you ever seen Pleasantville, where it's all black and white and
yes,
then they go to color?
Yes, that
was my first act, which is, it was like a neo contemporary dance kind of number, and I go from black and white to color. So I created this act, and then I started booking shows, and from there it was interesting because I still kittened, and I would dance and do shows, and then it took off on the train, and now I just perform mainly. I've been a full time burlesque performer for about 4 years, so I like transitioned out of like kittening and doing that, and now I just dance.
So this is what you do full time.
Yes.
So it's not just when you're with Ronnie Marmo, and I'm not a comedian, I'm Lenny Bruce. So yes. Whether you're there or whether you're someplace else, burlesque is your full-time gig.
Yes.
So what did your parents, have they seen you?
My mother has. My dad knows all about it. My mother has. My mother in particular loves it because of just the costuming. And, you know, and she's also gotten to meet so many of my friends who dance. And they're all just great, strong women who do what they want. And I think she really loves that. You
but
know,
dad,
it's refreshing.
Dad hasn't been able to see his little girl do this. Is that it?
He has not seen me perform live. No. I will say that last year, there's a festival in my hometown now for burlesque, and I was actually performing there this last weekend. But last year, my father came to see the festival, which was really exciting. I don't think he's ever seen burlesque. And while I wasn't performing that night, he got to see a good taste of what I do, which was really, and he had a great time.
Has he ever wanted to see his little girl nude on the stage?
I actually, we've never exactly really talked about it. I also feel like I'm not really nude on stage. Is that weird? You know, like for me, there's reveals and there's definitely like implied nudity. I mean, sometimes I'm wearing pasties. It depends on what you're doing.
Right.
But for me, it's like I'm creating an experience and it's the nudity is just kind of secondary to me. And what, like for me, burlesque is theater. And historically, you know, it is theater as well. I forget who said it, but they're like, what they're saying, burlesque is like the lowest branch of theater, but there's a great power in that because the lowest branch is the closest to the people.
It's so interesting that you use the word power, and that was something that I wanted to ask you. It seemed to me when we were watching you that you felt such power and felt so empowered. Is that the way you feel?
Oh, absolutely.
When you're out there.
Oh, absolutely. I love it. You know, I actually can be very shy. I've always been a confident person, but I actually have like a shy quality, which I didn't realize till I moved to New York. Because with where I'm from, I always stood out. You know, like
sure
I've always really bold.
Yes.
But even then, you know, I tend to listen more than I talk. And so, you know, burlesque for me is, I feel very empowered. I feel like I can express myself in a way that I almost verbally I can't explain. You know?
Because so many people, you know, they would have their judgments and look, what is she doing? And she's behaving in this highly sexualized way. And it's so anti-feminist, which, by the way, I don't feel that way at all. I think that the power that you really exude and the fact that you feel so empowered, I mean, if that's not what feminism is all about. But what kind of response have you had from friends, your parents are supportive, from men who you may have known or dated or had or have relationships with? How do they respond to you?
You know, maybe I live in my own bubble, or maybe I just have a force field around me, but I have to report that I actually have been quite well received. And even if I do get a little shade or something from somebody, I'm at a place, especially now in my life, where I don't vibrate on that level. I actually kind of like go right above it. Again, with my parents, I've never hidden anything from them. It's always been right out there. I will say, I'm actually, maybe 3 years ago, a very dear uncle of mine, who I love very much, I think he was taken aback by it. And there was an article in my paper about a burlesque festival, which I was doing. And my grandmother had cut the article out of the paper. And I think my uncle was like, oh, I can't believe what she's doing. Do you know what that is? And my grandmother was like, yes, I think it's fabulous.
Wow, what
so
a
my,
grandmother
yeah, I know. So my grandmother
have.
Went to bat for me, which I appreciate and love. And I love him, too. And it wasn't him being mean-spirited. I just think that because I'm so in it and I love it so much and I see the beauty of it that, like, I forget that for other people, it's a lot. You know what I mean? It's the definition of extra.
And I think that so many people, they have a lot of false and erroneous beliefs about what a burlesque artist actually does. I mean, some people might think that you're a prostitute. Some people might think they have all kinds of ideas about the kind of life that you actually have, which in your case seems to be a very healthy, stable lifestyle.
Oh, absolutely. And with men in my life, I've never hidden anything from anybody. It's always been out there. My boyfriend actually, I actually met him online. Yes, I met him online. I had never online dated before. Met him online, and one thing that is funny is when I created my profile, I'd never done one before, and they were like, "Oh, are you gonna?" I'm like, "No, you know, I'm gonna 100% be who I am."
Right. Good.
And
for
so
you.
I was, uh-huh. And we laughed about it because he thought I was a bot. Like, he didn't think I was a real person, uh-huh. Because it was like I had like my photos and there was like the glamour, and then I was like, "You know, I'm a burlesque artist," and he was like, "Well, I mean, I find her very attractive. I hope she's not a bot. Fingers crossed." Uh-huh. And you know, we ended up meeting, and you know, 3 years later, we're still together. But it's just interesting how I just was myself. And even now it's interesting, with my boyfriend, you know, he calls me Pearls.
He does.
I mean, every now and then he'll call me my legal name, but it's almost kind of odd because I met him as Pearls.
Well, it's so interesting. I mean, in the email that you sent me, there's Pearls, but then you have a couple of other names that you go by.
Yeah, I have
few names.
Yeah, my legal name is around. I mean, I was doing things before burlesque, so uh-huh. It's out there. I mean, if you go to my IMDb, you know, my legal name is out there, and I love my legal name. You know,
Do you prefer being called Pearls?
I do. I do at this point, also because it's my life. You know what I mean? It's really actually who I am. I always think of kind of like the Norma Jean and the Marilyn Monroe.
Yes.
You know, that kind of feeling is kind of how I feel. Like like Brianna, which is my legal name, I love that name. And you know, it has its time. It's always going to be a part of who I am. Mm-hmm. But
Pearls.
Yeah, I am. I'm Pearls.
You're Pearls now.
Yeah.
I mean, you sound so together. I mean,
thank you.
Really, really together. Confident, happy, just sort of impassioned with life.
Thank you. there is part of it where there is, I naturally am pretty optimistic, uh-huh. But a lot of it has been doing certain work on myself.
Uh-huh.
You were talking about that earlier. I was all ears.
Yes.
Because I am a big advocate for kind of going really deep, going in your roots, looking at your habits.
Yes.
And living a healthy life, really a healthy life, not just on the surface of things. Mm-hmm. And this last year in particular, I quit drinking.
Wow.
Which was pretty major, especially with what I do,
being
in nightlife.
to be saying this on the show. So alcohol was a problem for you, is that right?
Yes, it was. I was never like an out of control partier, uh-huh. Drinking type, but I will say, like, being in nightlife full time, it's so readily available. It's free. A lot of the times it's included in your pay. It's like, oh, well, here's your pay for the night, and you also get free drinks, whatever you want. So I was feeling physically really awful. I was really depressed, on top of just being busy. I mean, it's a hustle. Like, when you're a full-time nightlife person, it's a hustle. You're like out there every night. It's like being an athlete.
Yes.
Almost.
Yes.
You know, you're out there every night, and then, you know, schlepping your stuff all over. There was the physical nature of it. And then you know, my grandmother passed away. Mm-hmm. And that was a big thing on my family and me. And you know, life was happening. I turned 30.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of things. And so I was just kind of letting life happen to me.
Mm-hmm. And now you say you were depressed.
Yeah. Oh, I was.
And of course, as we all know, alcohol is a depressant.
Oh, yeah.
So with everything, with all the great things that were happening and the auditions and the bookings, mm-hmm. you were having a difficult time.
Oh, yeah. Reading up on it, I think I am a highly functioning depressive person, actually.
See, and nobody, of course, would ever know that about you or about me or about a lot of people mm-hmm. who've yeah. had some issues with depression.
Yeah. And that's, I think it comes down to, it's all about how you handle it, you know, uh-huh. which I learned. I was trying a lot of different things. I was trying to exercise. I was trying different things. But then where it got really crazy for me was that how I was looking, like, not just like a weight thing, but just energetically, mm-hmm. It was affecting my bookings. Mm-hmm. And so for me, that was like a tick. And then actually I had a near-death experience as well with toxic shock syndrome.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So that was like another tick number two.
Uh-huh.
And then the final tick of that year was, again, coming around to basically like putting on hold at a job. Like they called me about like, you know, it was a nightclub and they called me like about my weight. And they were like, you know,
why were you gaining weight or were you losing weight?
I was in a heavier state. Uh-huh. I like, especially for what they wanted.
Yes,
you
yes.
know, and I, you know, burlesque is interesting because I think the true, you know, the beauty of it is that it is for everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, there is mm-hmm. a place for everybody in burlesque. Mm-hmm. That is the truth, and I love that. And you get to be whoever you are in that moment, and I love that. But it's also show business.
Yes.
And the reality is, too, is certain venues, certain bookers have something that they want and need. So a certain look, a certain aesthetic. And it sucks. It can suck. But it, mm-hmm. if, you know, it is what it is. And so that is, that was really jarring for me, too. And they really took a moment with me and they called me. And they were like, you know, we think you're a great lady and we love your personality. We love, you know, we love having you. If you can change these things, we'd love to have you back. And the thing that was really frightening was that particular booker booked me a lot. So that was a big chunk of my income that I would be missing. So that was like the final thing. And I'll never forget. I had this moment. Actually, around this time a year ago, mm-hmm. I was in the backyard of my boyfriend's apartment, and I was sitting there with him, and I was actually really calm about it, and I was like, I think I'm done. I was like,
done with what?
With entertaining. I had a moment uh-huh. where I was just like, I don't know what else to do. I was like, you know, I'm, you know, I'm eating healthy-ish. I'm doing yoga. I feel stuck and, you know, all these things have happened and I feel terrible. I feel like I look terrible. I'm like, this is it. And he was like, no, like, let's really look at it. Like, okay, you've done these things. I have to give him a lot of credit. You know, you did these things, you know, like, he's like, I don't believe you. You love it too much. Mm-hmm. He's like, well, you know, you do drink a lot.
So it was the depression that was talking.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, and he was like, well, you know, you do drink a lot.
Uh-huh. He's Had he ever said that before to you?
No. Uh-huh. Not because I didn't drink in a way where I was ever like belligerent drunk. Or right. drunk or anything. It was mm-hmm. just, it was a thing. I drank, it's so crazy to think about it. Like I never had time off from drinking because mm-hmm. I would be out at night. I'd be at work mm-hmm. and you know,
it became a habit.
You know, three cocktails would get. I'm a tiny person. Yes, you know, yes. three cocktails and Lord only knows what else yes. a day,
yeah.
maybe day drinking.
So it really, you know, really caught up with you.
It did. Uh-huh. Whether it's so crazy to think about, and the toxic shock incident that I had, mm-hmm. The reason that even happened was because I had been drinking and I had forgotten to take care of some personal items.
Yes.
And, yes. You know, had I not been drinking, I would have been more aware of what I needed to do for my body.
So your boyfriend, it yeah. was a very courageous and loving thing to say to you. Hey, you know what?
Yeah.
Your drinking, honey, is out of control. And when he said that to you,
yeah.
what was your reaction? Were you upset? Did you say, gee, maybe I need to kind of think about how I'm living?
You know, I will say that even in this depressed state and everything, mm-hmm. I'm a good listener. I will say that I listened to him.
You took it in.
I took it in.
Uh-huh.
And I think I was at such a low point where it was like mm-hmm. I had so many things said to me that it mm-hmm. didn't matter, you know? Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. I took that in and I really listened to him. And also his tone was perfect. He wasn't accusing me.
Right.
And we were really going through the stuff. Mm-hmm. I was really like, I don't know what else to do. I was too in it.
Yes.
And I was like, you're right.
And that was it? You made a decision?
I was like, you're right. I'm going to look at this.
Uh-huh.
And sure enough, like I took it in. I thought about it. And maybe like a day later, it was a beautiful day. I remember it vividly. It was a beautiful day, a spring day. I was out all day running errands. I had had coffee. Mm-hmm. That's all I'd had. And then I went to work. And my friend is a bartender, and she was experimenting making a cocktail. She's like, do you want to try it? I'm like, yeah, of course. I had like three of them.
Uh-huh.
So all day I had coffee, right. my friend's drinks. I remember like the end of the night feeling, I was like, wow, I felt awful. I got in a car home. I got to bed. I woke up the next day. I felt like death.
Mm-hmm.
I thought of this conversation with my boyfriend. I thought of everything, and it was that day. I was like, I am done.
And that was it?
That was it. And it was like, because I had also made all of these excuses for
you know, for excuses.
I was like, I'm going to Dallas mm-hmm. to do this gig, and I'm meeting new people, and I want right. to socialize, so yeah. I should be yeah. able to drink with them.
Yeah.
But I was like, nope, I'm going to go to Dallas, and I'll just drink seltzers. I'm going to do it. I'm doing it. And that, and so actually it's crazy, my 1 year is coming up.
Congratulations.
Thank you. In
it's
May.
A big deal. It's yeah. a huge deal.
Yeah.
And you're committed to staying on track.
Yes. You know, some people have asked me, and another great thing about this is I've connected with so many people about like drinking and
mm-hmm.
habits.
Mm-hmm.
People that you wouldn't even know, or
absolutely.
that I heart, and I'm strangers on Instagram too, because mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'll like post like updates and I post things, and I've made some really beautiful connections with people, like encouraging them to look at their habits
yes.
and like and being yes. really like, I'm like, listen, I am in no way, shape, or form like a professional helper,
but you've been there. But you've been there.
But I've been there through experience.
Yes.
So it's been really. Amazing connecting with people about that. And I really actually really enjoy it. I actually really enjoy I enjoy helping people too. So it's been really interesting.
And do you feel a big difference? I mean, now it's going to be a year in May.
Yeah.
Physically, emotionally,
oh my
across
God.
The board. You can really experience
oh
the difference now.
100%.
Uh-huh.
It's wild.
Yes.
Because even when I was depressed and, you know, drinking and doing all these things to myself, I had high energy. Like I'm known for being like a high energy performer.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
I'm like a bubbly person.
Right.
And I was kind of, you know, still doing that. But now it's like, you know, I shoot out of bed in the morning and it's like Christmas.
Uh-huh.
I have 10 times more energy to do what I love. I feel better, on stage.
Yeah,
I just, yeah. I feel more present for people that I love. Like I'm there.
And it's such an important message, you know, people who listen to the show. I mean, it's so important to hear from people like yourself, not just from, you know, in quotes, the professional psychotherapist, that you can go down a bad, bad, slippery slope. And then, of course, there's a happening. And some
yeah.
people need many, many bottoming outs before they decide that they need to do something different. You know, my mantra, I talk about this all the time, acknowledge, address, resolve, you know, easier said than done. And you were very fortunate that you had a boyfriend who had the chutzpah, who was really, really able to be honest with you and loved you enough rather than hang up, hang back, and enable this to go on. And what do you think would have happened had he not said anything? I mean, he confronted you in a loving way. Do you think that you would have had this revelation at that point and stopped or not?
I honestly don't know. Mm-hmm. I like to think that maybe eventually I would have gotten around to trying it.
Ah.
But to be honest, I mean, I think that was the how it was supposed to be for me.
That was a defining moment for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Has it been hard?
Oh my God.
is every day a one day at a time kind of a thing for you?
Honestly, sometimes it's a total breeze.
Uh-huh.
I will say that this last August, one of my best friends got married. Mm-hmm. So it was interesting being at a wedding and like not drinking. Uh-huh. You know, there was that whole thing. There's certain moments where I'm like, oh, that I miss the ritual of it.
Uh-huh.
You know, the ritual.
Yes.
You know, especially being in nightlife, there's something so cozy about, like, you know, being backstage with your, you know, some friends that are performing and you like have mm-hmm. a cocktail together and you laugh. But I'm like, you know what? I can still be with my friends backstage and laugh and catch up. Like, I don't need this cocktail.
It's and just, have a seltzer water.
I can have a seltzer or
like
coffee.
Yes. Yes.
I've always loved coffee, but my coffee is like through the roof. I drink it all the time now. But yeah, it is hard, but it is worth it. It's 100% worth it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You seem so happy and so contented with your life. Are you across the board?
I am. I'm uh-huh. very grateful. Uh-huh. Every day I kind of meditate on that, and I get up and I'm just in I take the morning to myself, or even if I'm just in bed, and I'm like, I'm really grateful. You know, that I'm able to, I feel, because also it's interesting, I've been in New York almost 14 years, mm-hmm. and I feel like I'm really getting my unique groove now, mm-hmm. you know what I mean, where it's like everything that I've ever loved, you know, film and theater and dance, that has all come together,
mm-hmm. you know. And a stable relationship.
A stable relationship.
Yes.
My health. You know, taking mm-hmm. control of my health. And also, side note, because my parents, just a shout out to them, they're wonderful people. But since I have quit drinking, my father has quit smoking.
Interesting. Because I was going to ask you whether or not alcohol was a problem in your own family.
Never a problem. But I mean, but my parents, you know, they do drink. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. to their credit, they made... You know, we have great communication. When I was maybe in like late high school, mm-hmm. they would let me have wine with dinner.
Uh-huh.
They made it like a thing that, you know, like
a natural.
Yeah, because I wasn't a party girl. I didn't go out partying. I didn't mm-hmm. do anything. And mm-hmm. I think they wanted alcohol to like not be scary or dangerous.
You know what Gary yeah. Null's research has found? Of course, not just Gary Null, scientists around the world, because he works with the top scientists around the world in a variety of different areas when it comes to natural health. He says that every time somebody takes a sip or a drink, that it reduces 30 seconds from their lives.
Wow.
And those 30, yes.
Wow.
That was one of the latest wow. findings that he actually talked about. So you figure 30 seconds. Ah, and my producer is saying we have 2 minutes left.
Okay.
We have 120 seconds left.
Yeah.
But, so it's something that people need to really... take in. We have a lot of really important knowledge and research findings about mental health and substance abuse, and it's so easy to make excuses,
yeah,
and not do what is in our best interest. And we can make 1,000 excuses about our diets, about drinking, about drugs, about, you know, taking too many pills, and yet there is a defining moment for everybody, and sometimes it comes very late and sometimes too late, you know, for people, where you have to get really serious about saying that my behavior is kind of out of control and it's sabotaging my life, my relationships, my work. And, you know, I'm so glad that for you, that you had that, you know, defining moment where you were smart enough and wise enough to say, I need to do something about this. I need to address the problem. And here you are, almost a year sober. And I can't believe, how is it that this hour has gone by so quickly?
Pearls, this is, when you're having fun.
Well, yes. It is. And you know, I want to thank you so much. I mean, we're going to continue to stay in contact.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Because I love the chemistry between you and me and Jim when we all met. So, Pearls Daily, you're going to let everybody know when I'm not a comedian. I'm Lenny Bruce is going to be, you're going to be in the show again.
Yes. Right now it's running through April.
Yes.
And we'll see about possible extensions.
We hope so.
Yes, so it's very
everybody
exciting.
Everybody has to come and see I'm Not a Comedian. I'm Lenny Bruce at the Box.
Yes.
Right? And people can get tickets online.
Yes.
And, you have to come and see Pearls because you are quite the thing.
Oh, thank you so much.
No, you really are. And, you know, for me, it's such a pleasure talking with you. You're bright. You're smart. You're beautiful. You sound like you really got your stuff together.
I'm getting there every day. And that's the thing. Every day, it's a process.
For all of us, it's a process.
Everybody.
Everybody needs to work on things every single day to a greater or lesser degree.
Yeah.